You're listening to Sports Connections with David Smale, the show that brings you a fun and intimate look into connections throughout sports. Now here's your host, David Smale.
We're focusing on the NFL draft this week on Sports Connections, and we're focusing on the Chiefs draft. Obviously, Monday we had Bobby Bell. On Wednesday we had Jan Stenerud, and we have Neil Smith today. The Chiefs had the third overall pick, but they were afraid the Detroit Lions would take Smith or they would trade the pick to someone else. So the Chiefs traded their third pick and their second round pick to move up one spot. The Lions used the third pick for defensive back Benny Blades from Miami, who they probably would have taken anyway. And they used the second pick to take linebacker Chris Spielman of Ohio State. So that trade worked out really well for the Chiefs. Neil Smith teamed up with Derek Thomas to form one of the fiercest and most productive sack tandems in NFL history. Played with the Chiefs from 1988 through 1996 and still stands as the third leading sacker in team history. Neil, welcome to Sports Connections.
Thank you. Good to have you.
I'm going to talk about you coming out of college. You were a freak athlete coming out of Nebraska. I see you were 6'4 and a half, 260 pounds, with a 7'1 wingspan, and you ran a 4.55 40. Did you have any weaknesses?
Well, yeah, I had a little weakness. Everyone have weakness. The mindset that I had coming out is that, you know, I've always was a, you know, was a sports jock that played all four sports in high school. And I just, I was always an undersized kid. You know, I never thought that, you know, I was going to ever be the size that I was, but I know that if I put in hard work, then, you know, I know weight comes as you get older. And when I went to the University of Nebraska, it was all about, you know, that athlete, making that athlete. And when Boyd Epley at the University of Nebraska was a strength and conditioning coach, me and him become some of the best friends ever. You know, I found my love to the weight room and the conditioning part of it. The everything that came along with eating right and eating the right foods to try to gain weight. And it really helped me out to then. So my big hats off to those guys. You know, I had the ability. You know, I played baseball, I ran track. You know, I played basketball, and then football was probably the number four sport that I played. I just played because the guys asked me to play. And it just worked out tremendously. You know, once you put an athlete together and something comes out of it.
Obviously, in the introduction, we talked about you and Derek. How much fun was it playing on the same field, often on the opposite side, you know, left and right from the offense, but being on the same field with Derek Thomas, how much fun was that?
You know, me and Derek, we made it competitive. From the day he walked in, you know, I had an uncle that really followed, you know, college sport. He was a big LSU fan. And I've never seen Derek play in college, to be honest with you. I was so focused on when I got here, you know, trying to fit in and do the right things and go the right way. But my uncle followed Derek Thomas in college, and immediately he called me when Derek got drafted. He said, Neil, he said, you guys going to be the best tandem in football. He said, that Derek Thomas is something special. And when he said it, it's like, okay, well, I couldn't wait to meet Derek, you know, looking forward to meeting him and everything. And man, when we first met, you know, I'll never forget the late Marty Schottenheimer said to me, Neil, you guys gonna grow up together. You're gonna be together for a long time. He said, get to know each other, you know, have each other back and be there for each other. And that's just what happened through the whole deal of that. It actually rolled off just the way he said it, just the way he predicted it. And, you know, and everything else to speak for itself. Our play on the field and what we did on the field and off the field was fun to watch, you know, defensively. You know, of course, the game has changed now. It's all offenses oriented. And now it just to the fact that where everything now is changed tremendously. But, you know, we played some great defense back in those days. And big hats off to not just Derek Thomas, but our whole defense. I mean, we had a secondary that was just there was all pro before I even got there. You know, Lloyd Burrs, Deron Cherry, you know, Kevin Ross. And, you know, and Albert Lewis, those guys, they were freak of natures. There was cover guys. They were very smart. And when they put the two tandem together, as far as pass rushers, the guys that can get there, I don't think that Derek Thomas was lacking any of that. And I learned a lot from him also. You know, as we competed against everything, both on the field and off the field, I learned a lot from Derek Thomas. Derek Thomas made me do things that I didn't think I can do. And that's what you need to each other. And that's what makes each other. And that's what made us probably the best tandem pass rushers in the National Football League, even still to the day.
Now, you guys were as different personality-wise off the field as possible, though you were really close friends. How did you mesh so well together with your personalities being different? How did you mesh so well on the field?
Well, I just think that we both were Southern guys. You know, he just a little bit deeper South than I am. I'm in Louisiana, raised in Louisiana. He was raised in all the fun and sun of Miami down in Florida. So we had a lot in common. You know, Derek upbringing in life the same way I did. You know, Derek, mom made him grow up really quick. My mother made me grow up really quick. We grew up in a housing project. Derek grew up in some of the lower, you know, into the lower part of Miami. And Derek was a problem kid, you know, growing up and ran into as a teenager, ran into problems, juvenile detention, and I did. So it's almost some of the same type of players. But when you get an opportunity, you know, to make a difference in your life and to make a change in life, we was there on both accords. And that's why we became best friends. That's why we became, you know, he's the little brother that I didn't have, but I had fun with him the whole time I had it. You know, even to the day, you know, I lost my mother a few months back. That death of my mother hurt me really bad, but I think Derek Thomas absolutely took it out of me, because I had so many aspiration plans or how we always talked about how we gonna ever go about seeing each other and seeing our kids grow up and, you know, pushing them and doing everything that's right. We was gonna own Kansas City. But so his plan was Derek always thought out and thought big plans. And I gotta give it tremendously to him. He had a mindset that was so far abroad. But I would love to see that we had a great, it would have been me and him versus this kid that we have now named Patrick Mahomes, beg the difference of who owns Kansas City. So. But this is fun. You know, I still live here today, and you know, I raised my kids, and, you know, all my grandkids are now here. I got one on the way, and I'm just, you know, it's a very nice place to have family, and it's still in the Midwest. So that's why I never went back south.
You know, I know football's a business, and I know that, you know, you had the opportunity to go elsewhere. Our mutual friend Al Wallace told me once that Derek lost the joy of playing a little bit when you left to join the Broncos. Was it tough for you to be on a different team from Derek?
Oh my God, it hurt me tremendously. I just thought it was, I know the business. I kind of grew to know the business and plan and see guys go, but you never think the day when it's time for you to go. You know, you don't see that into yourself. So I think once I became a free agency and I had to go, it was no intention,
right,
once and ever to go to an opponent that we had to play face twice a year. It just happened to unroll that way.
Right.
For some odd reason, you know, I went to seven different NFC teams, and I went to, you know, some AFC teams, and I just happened to land in the, you know, in Denver. That's just the way the business rolled. It hurt me tremendously to leave here. You know, I had deep roots here. Never had no intentions to want to leave here. I've always had my plan to how I wanted to end my last play. If it would have unfolded the way it was supposed to be, how I was going to lead the field, how I was going to thank the fans, and how I was just going to be just all endured in the community. Well, it didn't end that way, but I'm still here, you know, and I'm still doing work in the community. So sometimes it never unfolds the way you want it to do, but when you have to go to to another place to make it happen, those things happen. That's just the way it goes.
Now, I see over your shoulder, you've got a Chiefs helmet, a silver helmet, but it's got the Chiefs logo on it. And I see to your lower left there, I see two Super Bowl trophies that you got with the Broncos. Sure. So I got to ask you, when you get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and that day's got to come soon.
I don't know, but this one right here, this one piece right here, this is Miss Lamar Hunt and Mrs. Hunt. That's one of my favorite pictures, and it sits up on top right here, which is that the Chiefs inducted to the Hall of Fame. And, you know, my thing is just here. You know, I left it online. You know,
That's what I was getting to, Neil. I believe you will get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and I hope it comes soon. When you go in, will you go in? Now, I realize baseball, they put a hat on you, and football, they don't. But would you go in as a Chief or a Bronco?
Oh, no, it's most definitely I would go in as the Chiefs. And I think that Denver fans would have known, even Denver, even the Broncos, you know, if I was to go back there and they put it in, I still would have to go as a Chief. I mean, I've had, this is where I was born and raised, you know, and I say that in a new life of football. So I was drafted here. I played more years here, and I would never, ever, you know, go against to where, you know, I originally started from, the people that gave me that opportunity, that gave me that first start. And so it means a lot to me. You know, Mr. Hunt, the late Mr. Hunt and Norma have done a great job, you know, with this community. They've done a great job of bringing this team and keeping this team here. And one of my greatest fond memories is, you know, before Mr. Lamont Howard passed, you know, when I was inducted in 2006 into the Chief Hall of Fame, is that was one of his last games that he sit there. And he told my mother, sitting right next to him, and God bless them in heaven right today. And she told me this, and it just really means that it's heart and it's soul that people believe in you and really like you to whom you are. Mr. Hunt looked over to my mother and explained to her, he's like, you know what, I wanted to see this day. This is one of my favorite football players. And for Mr. Hunt to say that, it means a lot to me. I mean, that you know, that was God sent. I mean, you know, all the players that he had, all the Hall of Fames that he had, for him to pick me to be one of his favorite players means a lot to me and the Hunt family for what they've done for me. So it's no doubt in my mind, I'm going back, that I absolutely will be, you know, a Chief forever, and will go down once I get into the Hall of Fame. And I hope to God that I'll be standing upright to voice my opinion there, you know, in one day when I do accept it to go in. So I'm sure it'll happen. I don't know when it's going to happen. It's not on me. You know, I put everything in the hands of the Lord, man.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, God has gotten me to where I'm at today and give me what I have, just for the fact that I can still feel and be blessed as my gift that he gave me. And it transferred to me as being, as a young man growing into an older man. And now I'm being a grandfather.
I will tell you, I remember the Chiefs coming to Kansas City in 1963. I was 5 years old. I didn't really know anything about pro football, but my dad was excited, so I was excited. So I am literally a lifelong Chiefs fan. Chiefs fans, I think, will forgive you for going to Denver, even for just a few years. Had you chosen the Raiders, I'm not sure it would have happened. That hatred of the Raiders goes really, really deep. I want to talk to you a little bit about your game. What was your biggest strength?
Well, my biggest strength was I had a great run ability, you know, run stopping ability.
Okay.
A lot of people didn't know that, you know, I played the strong side for a reason. You know, pass rushers always come to the quarterback weakest side, but I felt very comfortable being dominant left, you know, a left end. And that's where I was comfortable at. That's when I feel like, you know, I had my steps down and it was my strength. And the run ability was something that, you know, it came about this plan and being in the Big Eight, you know, coming out of the Big Eight where I was all running football in college, and, you know, teach you how to, you know, leverage it and play to win, play the passion. So that was one of my strength of my game. Now, everything else then came on with it, you know, my height, my length, my speed, my ability to get strong, and then, you know, later part of my career, my pass rushing ability, you know, how to get to the quarterback, you know, how to close the gap and to make a difference. I had a passion, which I think that they don't even keep account. And I think they just started to do this now in NFL. I had a passion of getting off the field on third down. And that's what me and Derek, love to get off the field on it. Whether it was a sack, you know, a fumble for a sack, or for me, it was knocking the football down, you know, closing the window where the quarterback can't see through it and getting that fingertip or that ball and knocking it down. That's just like a sack. It's just like a win. And they never counted how many balls I knocked down, but I enjoyed it. Knocking down footballs. Maybe that's why I couldn't catch them today, because I had so many times of knocking them down. So.
Now, you mentioned Marty. Obviously, we recently lost Marty Schottenheimer. Two questions about him. First of all, just a general one. What was it like to play for Marty? And two, how much did he help you in your growth as a football player?
I keep saying to myself and saying to everyone that Marty Schottenheimer is someone that if he was to go into the Marines, the Army, or Air Force, or any of our armed service, he would be the guy that would be the first guy that would absolutely get you ready to get prepared. He was one of those guys that I looked at and can get anything started. You know, he know how to talk to you. He know how to put you in places to make plays. And I ran across him a few times when we was in a three-man line. It was a 3-4 defense, and I just couldn't stand the 3-4 defense because I thought it was really hampering me, my ability to show my pass rushing ability, you know. And then Marty, you know, he made that change. And what he made that change? He made Derek man, because Derek liked the 3-4. He can rush the passer at all times. So he kind of made us both happy in the sense that we went to a four-man line, and it helped me in as much as it helped Derek play the bit. I remember one time I was doing a gap responsibility, and I was in the meetings, and I took my guy, and I jammed him and put him in my gap that I was supposed to be in. And the running back hits the back of him, and he bounces over to my other side, and I made the play in the backfield. And Marty said, "Neil, that is not your play. That is not your play." And he's like, "I don't care if you made it in the backfield, but that's not your play." So then I turn around to Marty and I say, "Well, hell, when is my time to make a play? I'm like, I'm a football player out there too. You want me to do all the dirty work, but you want somebody else to reap the benefit." Yeah. So we collapsed until, you know, he became, you know, he's one of the greatest coaches. I mean, he's one of the best coaches I've coached with. And you know what? Marty had a mindset that, you know, it was hard work.
Yeah.
Everything you do has got to be hard. Everything you do is going to be hard. It's not going to be easy in life. And he prepared me. I can say that he probably took some years off my life, you know, being upon him, because I remember we went down to William Jew and we practiced the first year he got there. Man, we had a 5-week practice, no pad, all full pads all the way through. And guys was just up leaving out of the overnight, and you never to see him again. And so he was running a boot camp on top of a boot camp, and you know, it made us win. We won. He put the winning attitude into, you know, Kansas City. Him and Carl Peterson, when Carl got here, they changed the man. They changed the name of the chief forever. Now it's called Chief Kingdom. And you know what? You have to give the credit to those guys, what they did and how they laid the foundation of a losing team to a winning team now, you know, and then someone takes it on to being a championship team once again. And they're going to have more championships here, you know, with this team that they have. And hopefully they can close the gap again to get back to where it was last year, to get that bitter taste out their mouth.
I want to talk about Carl, because we hear about coaches being players' coaches. Was Carl a players' GM?
Well, he was definitely Derek's players' GM. Because whatever Derek wanted,
Derek, there's your
Derek
daddy.
Wanted to do, that was Derek's father, in a sense, that's what he said.
Yeah,
but when Derek was the only guy that can get away with anything and to go ask Carl for whatever he wanted to, as far as on the field and off the field. I'll never forget. Derek had the ability to go up to Carl. We started this, you know, we still does it today, even in his death. Me and him, we started this a turkey drive, and we would raise money. We'd go around and raise money from these guys in the locker. Had one of the trainers go around and see how much they could pay down, you know, how much a player would give per every day. But then Derek took it to another level, which he would do. He took that. He said, "Hey, Carl, you know what? We raised $10,000. I wanted to know, can you match this?" And Carl gave him a $10,000 raise on it. So that turkey drive went from that. So then it went from that, you know, just like that to $40,000. And Derek was just like 10 and 20, whatever it is, Carl matched it. He walked up there. And that shows, you know, the ability that a guy, and then Derek and Carl had a great relationship, you know, off the field, where they, you know, every Thursday they met each other and they talked with each other and they was on the same line. So that's why Carl Peterson, you know, and then Carl drafted Derek, you know, and I was here before Derek got here, but Carl drafted Derek and I never felt like, you know, I felt no jealousy of the fact that they had this great relationship. I just didn't want to go see the principal. I mean, when I was growing up, I was a bad kid. I was a bad kid and I didn't care about seeing the principal or going to the principal's office. I didn't want to go to the principal's office. So long as I didn't have to go up there to call Peterson and talk to them, I was good. Fine with me. So I let other people do that. And Derek did that very well.
I helped Al Wallace write his biography a couple of years ago, and he talked a lot about you too. And he said he remembers many times being at practice and he would hear your voice say, Hey, Derek, there's your daddy. You know, you referred to Carl as Derek's daddy. I want to talk about one other thing with Carl and Marty too, is they encourage their players to get out into the community. It's how the Chiefs kingdom has really been built, even doing radio shows. How did Carl and Marty help you adapt to life in the NFL, not just as a player, but as a personality? How did they help you?
Well, you know, they encourage everyone, you know, to give back to the community. And Carl absolutely had it on his resume along with Marty. They agreed to something of the fact that they wanted everybody to be involved into the community. And how far you wanted to take it, that was totally up to you. Of course, you know, when me and Derek did things, we wanted to take it to another level and bring it as high as we could. You know, when I had the Yes, I Can Foundation, my foundation was going good. I had it to where I was giving back to, you know, kids that had a learning disability and the same thing that I was diagnosed with, you know, dyslexia. So and I wanted to take it. So then Derek, you know, started his program and, you know, with the Third and Long Foundation, and he needed a name, you know, for his foundation. And I said, well, Derek, you know what? Give me a thought. I'll think about it. Let me just think about it a little bit and it'll come to me. And we were just sitting in a meeting one day and you know, and I kept hearing like, you know what, you guys got to get off the field on third down. You got to get off the field. Let's get this guy sacked, get these quarterbacks on the ground, this and that, get off. And it just dawned on me. And as soon as we got out that meeting, man, I kind of wrote it down like third and long. I asked Derek, I said, Derek, you know what, man, what do you feel like? What's your best down in distance? He said, I like third, man, like third down. I said, yeah. I said, third and what, third and short? He said, no, third and long. And I looked at him, I said, see, that's the name right there of your foundation. And he lit up like a Christmas tree. You should have seen it. He was like, say, Holmes, how did you just think of that? I said, I don't think about it. It just come. And you have accepted. So when I learned, when I named the Third and Long and helped him name the Third and Long Foundation, Derek Thomas took it to another whole level as far as getting players out there to get involved with his reading program, bringing players each weekend to come read with the kids and all of that. So it was really fun. I'm growing in, and that was great for, you know, for calling them to do that. And I'm sure it led to where the guys that was before us. I mean, you know what I enjoy most when I became a Chief is meeting the Bobby Bells and the Lynn Dawsons and all of those guys that's in the ambassadors the Otis Taylors that came out, the Jan Stenner rules, all those guys that came out, you know, that was a part of this program and how they, you know, each week they came and just had a piece of pizza with us and you know, and had a beer or two with us out there on Thursday, and they could tell us how they got involved. Well, my guy was the late Buck Buchanan. He was the one that got me involved. He took me hand in hand. He said, you know what, Neil, I love you to death, and I want you to come out this Saturday. And I was like, whoa, like, I don't know my way around Kansas City. And he said, I work on my foundation, and I want you to come out and make an appearance. And I went out there to the Special Olympics and made an appearance with him. And man, I tell you what, that changed my life. And I said to myself, I want to do this forever. And that's all it do. It just takes someone to just drive you to give you opportunity. Nowadays, you know, it changed. You know, the guys, you know, you can't hardly, you know, you can't hardly get with them or talk to them. You know, they just, as people say, they are different in their own way.
Yeah.
And I don't know what make him. I just pray to God that we hope that they can give back and want to give back to the community, not just because of the money, just because you have to, you know, to see the next one through. So I think most of those guys get it, and hopefully they can remain doing the same thing.
There's one story that I've heard about you that I want to verify with you, first of all, and if it's true, commend you for it. My understanding is that after Derek passed away, you basically took your foundation and rolled it into Third and Long as a tribute to him. You gave up the notoriety of having your own foundation, and you just, you merged it with Derek's. Is that true? And why did you do that, if it is?
Well, it's absolutely true. That's exactly what I did. I mean, in the NFL, you know, you have to have either a current and a present person, that player that actually can be involved as, you know, to take it on. Derek Thomas about to lose that foundation because Derek is deceased. And I say, what greatest gift I can give back to a friend and a brother in Derek Thomas is that, you know, they came and said, well, we think we're going to close down the Third and Long Foundation because, you know, we don't have a current player or a present player that want to be involved in it. And I just said, stop. I just told Ms. Brown, Ms. Betty Brown, who's the president. I said, stop. Kevin Riggenham is all those guys that was involved. I said, I would do it. I would definitely take Third and Long as long as I could, you know, not drawing a dime from it. Right. And never see it ever go out. Keep the flame lit because I know what it meant, you know, to Derek to absolutely to have, you know, that's his baby. That was his baby. Those kids that come through there, we look at them like they are our kids.
Yeah.
And to start and to take it over and to say, you know what, to the day I die, I will have that, you know, and now, you know, not just the rename of it and what we're doing and still continue to do. And we need help. You know, we're not afraid to say we need help.
Right.
You know, we need people to please give back to us where we can get these kids through schools or get them to learn to a high level, to read to a high level. And we have so many kids that come back, man, that have been through our program where, you know, we got doctors, lawyers, you know, we have attorneys that come back and they give back and they speak to our kids. And this is what it's about. It's about turning the investment. That's what we did on the field, yeah, to give back, to come back to what we have. So. Hats off to, you know, Ms. Brown them for even asking me and for me to even step up and say, hey, you know what? Why not? You know, he would have did it for me.
Yeah, it's just, I think that's so unusual, Neil. And I maybe I'm wrong. Maybe anybody would do that for a friend. But, you know, you had your own foundation, you had your own initiative and your own charge to get that thing done and to basically give that up. That, you know, I just want to commend you for that, because that is very unusual. I think that's great. I want to ask you about a couple of your teammates, a few of your teammates. Just tell me the first thing that comes to mind with some of these guys. Most of them were on your side of the ball, but I got to ask you, first of all, about Dan Salamoua.
Dan Salamoua, you know, Derek Thomas always gave everybody the name, a nickname. He called him Lope. We call him Down Lope, the Lope man.
Okay.
He's a fun guy, man. Danny was high spirit. Was very intelligent and was very strong as a physical specimen.
Yeah.
What I loved about him is that, you know what, he had ability to, when a ball was on the ground, he was going to get it. I think he had more fumble recoveries in the Chief history of any player. It got to be up there because
yeah,
it looked like every time the ball hit the ground, he was so low to the ground that he swooped it up. And he had fun doing it. You know, he had fun doing his part. It wasn't nothing too much about him. Pound for pound, until another guy came. Danny was probably one of the strongest guys I've seen, and he could take 500 pound and drink pressure like it was his plan there. Until a guy by the name of Joe Phillips came through, and he begged the difference.
Yeah, and I'll ask you about Joe in a second. Here's my favorite Dan Salamoua story. I was at some event, and there were a few Chiefs that came by, and I had my kids with me, and I don't even remember what I was doing there. And my daughter was probably fourth or fifth grade and very engaging young lady and just would chat with anybody. And Dan came up to our table and just started chatting. And my daughter she talked to him for 10 or 15 minutes. And he thought, man, what a great young, she wore it. She had a Chiefs t-shirt, wasn't a jersey or anything, but she had a Chiefs t-shirt. And he thought, man, I'm really entertaining this young lady, until got through. And finally she says, so mister, what do you do for a living? And Dan went, I don't even remember what he said. He didn't say he was a Chiefs player.
Yeah, man. I'm like, there's so many stories that come out there every day, man. Somebody said what I did. Hey, I can say right now, if I did anything that was negative to anyone that's out of Kansas City, if I had never, ever apologized to you, let me tell you right now today that I apologize to you. Sometimes you have rough days.
My daughter's the one that needs to apologize to Dan.
Yeah, that's funny.
No, I harass her about that. Let's talk about Joe Phillips. Just the strong, I got to know Joe. I helped him do a book back in 97, but one of the strongest people around, wasn't he?
Oh, counselor. We call him the counselor because, you know, Joe Phillips was another smart guy.
Yeah.
And,
he was,
you know,
an attorney.
Me, Derek was, I would speak for Derek, you know, and Derek would have probably spoke for me in the same likeness of those two guys, Danny and Joe Phillips. Man, those guys was beasts. And, you know, they was made us, you know, those guys draw those two guys in inside on them, those double teams. And I took a lot of them myself, too. But I'm saying those guys did the double teams, took those double teams on for us to just blossom. I mean, it's a sacrifice for teamwork. You know, of course, it's like, you know, who gets all the glory? The quarterback when he throw touchdowns, you know, the running backs do it. He do his job and he sets up things. He moves his sticks. And, you know, and the receivers get all the touchdowns. So it's just like offensive linemen never get the credit that they get. But those two guys were so special to me and Derek through the years. And, you know, the backup, there was really, really tremendous for us. And Joe Phillips, I still to this day, I think we had maybe 400 pound or two, I think it's about 300 pound a piece dumbbells that he used to just walk around and sit down with them and just pump them. And then on his last one, he just boom, just throw him as far as you can. And he just hit the cement floor and like, boom, it sounded like an earthquake, man. But he was fun, man. And one of the funniest things that I remember about Joe Phillips is Joe Phillips used to walk around it before every game and just, you know, he'll go and get a clove of garlic and peel it and put it in his mouth, start chewing garlic before a game. And then he'll walk around and peel an onion and start crunching on an onion, you know? And then he'll come to the huddle, let's go. And I'm like, oh my God, dude, come on. Are you serious? Like, you're killing me. He said he just wanted to breathe on somebody. And
he did that to the offensive line.
Oh, he did. And I don't know if it was him or Salamone, but I'll never forget. They was lined up over the football and one of them had to throw up. And he threw up on the offensive lineman's hand. And I was like, man, that's the greatest gift of all. I would have never probably thought about that.
Oh, my goodness. All right, yeah. Let's switch to the other side of the ball. You mentioned the quarterback getting the glory. Obviously, the one who got the most glory during your time there was Joe Montana. What kind of a teammate was Joe Montana?
Oh, my God. Joe Money. We call him Joe Money, man. Joe Montana was a great enlightenment for us. It was something Derek was and I was really excited about. Like, man, we finally got a quarterback. Now we got a quarterback. And we knew we had to protect him. We know he was at the end of his career. We knew we had a little bit more left in him, you know, and we respected that. And I didn't really know how to even approach Joe Montana. All the championships and trophies he won. Man, it just meant a lot. You know, it was like, man, he said, that kind of guy come play for you, you got to have the respect for him. And we did. You know, we had all the ultimate respect for Joe and how what Joe meant for us coming in. And I tell you what, you know what? I know he's a small story about him, just for me. He did something for me that I would never, ever forget that he did. And he didn't have to do it. I got fined one time from hitting a late hit on a quarterback. And it just happened to be Steve Young. And Joe Montana paid me the fine. And I told him he didn't have to pay me the fine for it on a short story side of it. And he said, well, if you don't take this money, I'm going to go back into the special team meeting and I'm going to give it away to all the special team players. I say, Joe, give me that money. I'll take it. So I always call him. I said, man, you know what? You're the coolest Italian guy that God ever made. And to the day, he is that. He was all of that. Prankster, by all means, a prankster. Still to the day, I don't know who played the prank on me. Well, you know, with my baseball bat, I used to always, you know, have a baseball bat in my locker that every morning I just get it, grab it and, you know, grip it, you know, have a feel for it because in every sack that I get, I was chalking off, you know, sack on this guy, got a sack on that guy. So I had so bad with all these sacks on it, you know, throughout my career, was put a mark on it. Well, lo and behold, one day it was missing out of my locker. Now we got pranksters, you know, I know Derek would do it and I know Joe would do it, but I think they probably did it together. But Joe, I heard about the pranks that he did. So I knew it was him. They wrote me a ransom note and told me that if I didn't have $10,000 and leave it on the 50-yard line, I would never get my bat back. That they were turning into 10,000 red toothpicks. So I look at the note, read it, and I'm like, I ain't put no damn 10 grand on it, but I'm gonna fake it and see who's gonna put it down and see who's gonna come get this money. So I did that, and no one ever showed up, and I still haven't found out to this day who it was. So I'm one of those guys.
I don't know him. I've met him a couple of times covering games and stuff. Steve DeBerg, what a clown he was.
Yeah, Steve was special in his own way, man. What a tough individual. You know, when he broke his finger, man, he had that pin sticking in out of that finger.
Yeah,
and he
just throwing like this.
I didn't learn that until later part of my life about pins and needles sticking out of me. I actually had, you know, my wrist refused, and they had to put those pins in. I can imagine me just bumping it with my own arm, that I can go into a football game and have somebody to hit that thing, or he can hit it on the helmet there, or hit it again with that in there, man. It sits you down. And Steve DeBerg was a fun guy. Halloween was probably his favorite day of the year. I don't know why, but he always dressed up. Come through the locker room with different people. Didn't know who he was. An old man one time sitting in the locker. I'm like, the guy, he was fun. He was a fun dude. He always had the great, you know, always had the funnest parties, at his house and stuff like that. And he always kept everybody together. And that's so he was, he's still Steve DeBerg. And the funny thing, I never forget, when I was a part of the arena football team here in Kansas City, I was thinking about, I said, man, what guy can bring back to be a coach? And I thought about Steve DeBerg. I said, you know what, Steve DeBerg would be the greatest quarterback ever that I could bring back to Kansas City, that knows the game, that know he can get involved. So me, as a, you know, as a part owner of the Brigades, I called Steve DeBerg up, and I said, Bergie, I said, he said, hey man, he said, what's going on? I said, nothing much, man. No, I'm calling you. I said, I just wanted to see if you would have any enlightenment to be a part of our arena football team here in Kansas City. Now, Bergie thinking that I'm trying to tell him that he can play again. He got all excited. He got all excited about what he can do, how he can throw the ball, and how the field is sharp. Yeah, I know it. I can still do it. When you want me to come and play? And I said, whoa, 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 whoa. We want you to play.
He had to be like 50 at that point.
Oh, my God. He wanted to play. He still wanted to play arena football. And I'm like, no, Joe, we want you to be a coach. Would you consider being a coach? He said, no, I don't want a coach. But if you want me to be a player, I'll definitely play. But we end up having... We end up picking a guy, Kevin Porter, to come back to do that football team. It's funny, man. These guys are so funny, and still today you can call each one of those guys. I called Joe when he had an accident up in when somebody walked into his home and tried to take his grandbaby out of there when it was just there, man. I was like, Joe, man, you got to get some security. You got to know who you are. And he said, Neil, he said, you're right. He said, I finally got a guy that's here 24/7. So. You know, thank God he still listened to me, even though, you know, quarterbacks don't listen to defensive guys, but friends, they do.
All right. And the last one I want to ask you about is our mutual friend, Tim Grunhard.
Mm-hmm.
You went up against him a few times in practice. What kind of a teammate was he?
I call Timmy my boy, man. He's my boy, man. We, young, he was feisty, he was an offensive lineman. You know, he had a little dirtiness to him. He probably said the same thing with me. He's like, man,
actually he did.
Competitive. He's competitive, man. And one day we just went at it. Me and him, we always thought we knew it was going to be a long, long camp. And we wanted to start off, me and him made a deal that we're going to start off every year with a great fight between offense and defense, and that'll get us going. And me and him squared up, we hit each other, and man, we was just all out fighting, but no one, you know, we just went at it as teammates. We're fighting, the offense against defense is fighting, pulling and chugging and pitching. And then all of a sudden, now it's on. It's on. So camp started originally when me and Tim had to get up in that fight every year to make it right. So, but I'm like, this is literally a fight, because it was something I did, he didn't like, and it's something that he did, I didn't like. So, but we had fun with it. You know, we still respect each other to the day. And, I love Tim Grunhard to death, man. And he's just, he's a teammate. And I had a lot of teammates here, man, that I can look at and say, man, look at those guys. You know, Tracy Simeon, Marcus, Marcus Allen, one of the guys that, I competed against on the other side and came back. And, and you know, became a great teammate. A whole lot of guys, man, that I could just say, you know what, I love those guys to death on that. And I went to war with them, and we went to war with each other. We know we could take each other back, and it was fun doing it. So, so my hats off to those guys and whole Kansas City family that I played with and played against.
All right, I got two final questions. One of them, the story I shared with you recently about one of my best friends named Neil Smith, who was riding on an airplane. It was a red eye flight. And there was like four other people on the flight, and this guy sits down right next to him. I mean, practically empty plane. And this guy sits down next to him, and he looks over like, couldn't you sit somewhere else? And I guess he had a funny look, and the guy said, yeah, I know you recognize me. I'm Duron Cherry. And and he goes, okay, yeah. He goes, well, I'm Neil Smith. And Duron goes, no, I'm really Duron Cherry. And he goes, well, I'm really Neil Smith. And yeah. I'll make the story a little shorter, but he asks his wife to get out the football card, and he holds it up next to him. He says, see, I'm Duron Cherry. And Neil gets his wallet out and looks at his driver's license and says, see, I'm really Neil Smith.
That's funny. I know there's a Neil Smith here in Kansas City. I just didn't know that you knew him. And I did meet one guy before, and he had to literally show me that he was Neil Smith. And boy, that's just my brother from another mother. And yeah, we all still Neil Smith.
Well, we're very, very close friends. And I wanted, he knows I do these podcasts, and I told him I was going to do an interview with you. And he said, ask him if he remembers his brother from another mother. So
that's me. That was him. That's my brother.
I'm glad you still do.
Right there.
My final question for you, what do you miss most about your playing days?
Oh my God. What I miss about my playing days, you know, when I retired in 2000 and I walked away, you know, I had no intention ever to come back. I really didn't. I actually retired before 2000. Junior Seau, the late Junior Seau, called me and asked me to come up and play with him in San Diego. How he got me to do that, I did it because I know Junior was a great guy. I know Junior, you know, needed me at the moment. And when guys does that, you know, they can get to my soft side. You know, I can't say no, you know, to somebody that want to get something done. So
yeah,
I look at Junior and I say to Junior that, you know, thank you for allowing me to come and play with him. You know, even though I know I was at the end of my glory, and I could say it was probably one of the worst football teams I ever played with. So I had the beginning of the worst football team I ever played with the Kansas City Chiefs. We only won two games, and I probably had the worst going out when I played with San Diego, and we only won one or two games that year. So this did the full turn, and I played in three decades, the 90s, you know, the 80s, the 90s, and then 2000. It took that many generations to come back around for me to realize that, you know what, you've done all you can.
Yeah.
You know what more can you do? Can you, you know, you miss something, but you just have to make an adjustment, and you got to have a mindset that it life goes on. What does it take you from there to what you're really going to be in the rest of your life? And I really don't miss nothing. I'm about to say, I damn sure don't miss the smell of the locker rooms. I can't go into a gym no more because I don't like the smell. This that smell, man. And you don't smell it because you're there every day, but it's nothing they can do to clean that smell out of that.
Yeah.
And you know, so cahoots to all of those equipment managers and those trainers and all those guys that works on the underground to make those teams go, man, they deserve all the glory, brother. The players are just the players, but you got guys that put us on the field. You got guys that prepare us. You got coaches to make us play. And, you know, and we've got these guys that just, you know, even got the ground crew guys. Don't never get any attention. You know, Josh Thomas, my guy, Andre Bruce, all those guys out there, Doug, all those guys out there. Those are my friends. I went to every part of that foundation and thanked them when I left, man. And it was so important for me to do that because those people that I got to see every day, got to know, and got the love, and when you want to exit, if you ever want to exit, you got to go back and thank those people for what they've done.
All right, well, that's a great transition. I want to thank you on behalf of Chiefs fans. Thank you for your years serving the Chiefs and bringing glory to the Chiefs. It was great to follow you from a distance, and it's always good to catch up with you personally. So I appreciate you joining me.
Yeah, thank you for having me too.
All right, buddy.
Go Chiefs.
Thanks for listening to Sports Connections with David Smale. Make sure to subscribe, follow, and rate the show from your favorite podcast platform. You can learn more about David Smale and his work by visiting davidsmalebooks.com. Don't forget to join us weekly for new episodes. Until next time.